Well, hello and welcome to the Tim Masso podcast. I'm so happy that you've joined us. And by us, I mean myself and watchmaker and entrepreneur Dan Reuter. I first met Dan at Watch Time New York in October of 2021. In the short time I've known him, I have found out that he is a man of both ability and integrity. Dan, welcome to the show.
And thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. Appreciate you.
Tell me a little bit about your personal history and your family history, because there's a lot to relate, and it's not just about the watches.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, before everything started, my family actually originated in Ukraine. And my great-grandmother, Bluma Reuter, she immigrated from Ukraine during the war. So she, thank God, escaped the Holocaust, and she moved out with her factory, which she used to work at that time in a small village of Vinnytsia in Ukraine. So she escaped the war and she ran to Russia to kind of get away from all that, crazy experience. So as when we came about, right, she played a huge role in my youth, because she took care of us. She, my sister and me, basically grew up under her care, because, you know, when your parents are young, they want to hang out, they want to, you know, enjoy time with their friends. And she was like kind of like a babysitter for us. And she was a very tough woman. She was mentally tough. She was inspiring also, very big-hearted woman. And so when I actually thought about making my watch, I wanted to dedicate it to her, because all the time she invested into us, make us better and have a better future, I wanted to create something in her honor. That's something that outlive us and my generation, and would still carry on her legacy of being caring and loving. And so that's pretty much the story of Reuter, of how the family name became Reuter, because that wasn't actually my last name. I actually took her last name and put it as a brand.
Now, what I like is that all of this actually helps to inform my own watch. So for those of you who don't know, after there was an auction for a Ukrainian food kitchen benefit, and my old Zin, which I love very much, went away. And Dan contacted me about creating a watch to take the place of my old Zin. And immediately we had a lot of ideas, but the thing that jumped out was this idea of doing royal blue on the dial with a green that's kind of a combination of Ukrainian yellow and blue. And so that's how I came to own a Reuter watch myself. And so I love that we will always have that connection. And you actually sourced the leather strap from Odessa. How is that possible right now?
Yeah, that was pretty interesting, because all my straps are actually made in Odessa. I am... found this artisan from Ukraine accidentally on Instagram, because because he was typing in Russian. Actually, when you go and type the keywords in Instagram, not many can understand, not many people can find him. So I was able to find him and contact him, and we became friends. So I asked him to help me with my straps, because I wanted to make the high-end straps. And so his work was very, very cool, very awesome. And so he agreed. And then we started working. He would make me a couple of straps at first, and he would make me some more and more. And now he makes all the custom straps for me. And actually, he works by himself. He doesn't source anybody out. He makes each an individual strap, stitches and everything in his atelier in Odessa. And it takes them 2 days to make one strap. So it's a pretty lengthy process.
Yeah, really. Like when I got that strap, I looked at it, I'm like, this is a work of art. Like I have to make this last. So when the heat arrived last weekend and I'm realizing I'm starting to sweat, I got to swap to a rubber strap. So I put it on the rubber strap you gave me. I'm like, I'm saving that leather for special occasions.
No worries, we can make some more if you need extra straps. That wouldn't be a problem. Just give me a heads up, because it takes a long time, especially when right now it's very difficult to ship out from Ukraine. But I was very fortunate. He had a friend traveling to Spain. And so he asked the woman to take the straps and ship it over to Spain to New York. So I was very lucky. That was awesome.
So I have this strap that's been around the world through several hands. Yeah. It is a work of art. Like, I wish I had the strap right here, but if you catch my Watches Tonight show, you'll see it on my wrist. Gator on both sides, like a freaking F.P. Journe with this neon green stitch through the blue. Like, I'm thinking, you know, Dan's saying, oh, we can get you another strap. Just let us know. I'm like, this strap is going to last as long as the watch. I'm never throwing this away.
And the funny thing, how we were choosing the stitching, because he has so many options, and I was like, had to pick point the exact color that I want. It's like, okay, how about this color? I'm like, nope, this is too light. Nope, this is too dark. This one. So we eventually, you know, we agreed on the color and everything, so it came out beautiful.
Yeah, and I've got to say, you've taken an unusual path to watchmaking. Like, we talked a little bit about your family background, but you don't come from a watchmaking background so much. You're self-taught. Tell us a little bit about where you started and how you came to watchmaking.
Oh yeah, that was an interesting story, and I've had quite a few things along the way. So initially, I guess I was addicted to watches from youth. But when I was about 10 years old, my father bought a first Orient watch. For me, that was like, wow, I've never seen anything like it. It looked like the Rolex back in the day. It had a date and a day, like the day in red and the date in black. So I remember him specifically getting that watch and wearing it for a long time. And I loved it so much. And I was about 12, he gave it to me. So that was, for me, it was like a wow. So I wore that watch through my youth until I lost it. And eventually, that's how I actually initially became in love with watches. And then after, when we moved to New York, after a while, when I went to high school, right, I had a barber. I used to have more hair back in the day, but I had a barber, and he would cut my hair, and he was a mature guy, and he had a Movado Esperanza with like a dot, yellow dot. So that was a classic watch back in the day. I was like back in maybe 98, 99. And so I'm like, wow, this is the watch I really want. So I became obsessed with Movado. And when I graduated high school, I asked my mom to get me that Movado. And she agreed. It was a $1,200 watch back in the day. It was very expensive. Yeah, so she purchased it for me on ashford.com, as I remember. Back then, I don't know if it still exists, but anyway, so she bought me that watch, and I had it through all my college years, and I loved it so much. It was very thin. It was like a classic piece. And then I gave it to my brother. She still enjoys it. Anyway, so that was the first interaction, like, with a high-end watch for me in America. And then after college, when I graduated, I was thinking to do something, right? Corporate environment wasn't for me. So I wanted to do something on my own. I was pretty social. I was, you know, fun kid to be around. And I got into DJing. I became a DJ. Yeah, so I had a lot of passion for music. You know, I was playing in different clubs, learning how to mix. And eventually, I decided to go to school for sound engineering after college. So I'm like, let me go do that, try that. I had a lot of passion for music. So I finished the music of audio research in the city for 1 year. I started working in a recording studio, doing mastering and recording. And meanwhile, I was browsing eBay, right? Looking for something else to do, like additional income. And so I stumbled upon lighters, 18 karat yellow gold lighters, Dunhill, vintage lighters. So I would just buy a lighter, refinish it, and sell it. And that went pretty cool. So I learned how to refinish, how to polish. That was my first interaction with finishing. That's how I learned finishing. So I would do that for a couple of months, maybe a year, was selling lighters, making a little bit money. So that was like, okay, I could make some money here. And then I don't remember how, but I transitioned myself into looking for watches on eBay. That was like 2004, maybe 2005. And so at that time, I didn't know which brands, you know, I like more, and started researching. And I stumbled upon Breitling. So I'm like, I like chronographs. Let me look into Breitlings. So I remember buying my first old Chronomat 13050 from the 90s. It had a blue dial. It was very old, and it had a blue strap. And so I bought that watch for $800. And I'm like, okay, let me try and refinish it, take pictures and sell it. So, and at that time I was into photography as well. I mean, I was doing everything, music, photography. I was a pretty creative guy back in the day. So I took that watch, I polished it, I took pictures of it, put it on eBay and sold it, made some money. And so this was like a beginning of my journey with watches. And so for like the next 12 or 14, I was selling watches, buying and selling watches, making money that way. And a lot of brands came along, and that was my turning point for kind of buying and selling to making my own. So as I got addicted, and you know, I knew how the business worked from buying and selling, I got tired of it. So I was like, I want to do something more. I want to create my own watch, because I've seen a lot of watches in my past, and I kind of like knew exactly what I want. I wanted something simple, something reliable, something based on the Velogy 7750, because that was my, you know, movement of choice. I loved it so much. And since that Breitling that I bought from the 90s, it was so reliable, so precise, I said, this is the perfect movement, you know, and it's accessible. A lot of people could refinish it and fix it, and a lot of watchmakers knew it. And so that's how I chose my movement. And when I started to make a watch, pretty tough, because there was no, like, I had to find components, and I had to know how to put it together. And so I didn't know where to go. I had no education of watchmaking or anything like that. I just knew how the watch worked and I knew how it looked. That's pretty much it. So I started researching. I started researching on YouTube, watching the videos of how to put and take apart the watch, watching Larry tutorials. And that kind of helped me a lot to gain the exposure to watchmaking. Because again, I couldn't really get into the school. Maybe I could have, but then pandemic hit, the corona hit, and that's it. You couldn't really do anything. So after me deciding what to do, I started looking for suppliers. So I went online again, and it took me like maybe a year to just find something that I want. And I would buy a case already pre-made. So I'd find a case in Germany. I would find a dial manufacturing. I would find a hand. And this is already made from the start by our factory. And so I would just put a watch, like a Frankenstein, as you would call it, right? Find the case here, the dial there, and the movement, of course, 7750 was pretty much available. So I put that watch together, and I would show up to show my friends, and they're like, wow. And none of my friends back then weren't watches. So I was like, okay, let me make some watches, maybe get them into watches. And so once I made that watch and my friend saw it, he's like, I want to get that watch. I'm like, sure. And they don't want to spend a lot of money. So I would, you know, make a watch and charge him like a funny, you know, funny amount. But it was pretty interesting because I was very passionate. And this was like an inspiration for me. Oh, I can make watches and let people see it.
And what year was
so
that? What year
this was that? This was in 2000, I would say 16. When I actually built my first watch, like to actually and actually gave it to my friend who actually wears it to this day, every day, he wears this watch every day. And so this was like, that's it. I have to get into this game and find correct suppliers and make my own from scratch. So 2019, right? Oh, and before that, I was just continually look on how to disassemble and assemble the movement, because 7750 was a, you know, pretty tough movement if you have no idea what you're doing to disassemble and assemble. So would continually disassemble, assemble, and until I got it perfect, you know. So later in 2019, I had to go to Switzerland. I had to visit Switzerland and go to the Basel, and thinking I could meet somebody there and maybe, you know, get new connections with suppliers. And that's what I did. I picked up my things in 2019. I had a few friends with me and we just traveled to Switzerland just to see how, you know, I've never been to Switzerland before and never experienced the Basel world. So for me, it was a great experience. And when I visited, I had a chance to meet a friend there who was a watch supplier back then. He still works in Switzerland. He's an amazing guy. And we became really close friends, and he started helping me on my project. We developed a design. We put together the drawings, and about a year later, we had five samples, and from that, that's kind of like how my watch was born, original watch, Reuter watch. And I had a friend, by the way.
Oh yeah, I was just saying, it's a good thing you did Baselworld in 2019, because that was the end. That was the last.
Exactly. I caught the last Baselworld, and I was so great I did that. And by the way, you see the desk behind me? Yes. This was hand-built by a friend who actually visited Switzerland with me. He's the contractor, and he's like, D, I want to help you, you know, as I can. Let's make a desk. Because before, I used to assemble watches on regular, like, a kitchen desk. I didn't have a specific. It was uncomfortable. I was, you know, doing like this. But, yeah, so as soon as I came from the Basel, I visited his shop, hit a mill shop in Brooklyn. And I visited his shop, and we put together a design again. And this desk was built from scratch. And these handles were made by me. I put the leather on top and everything. So it's pretty cool.
I think a lot of people who have never worked on a watch before underestimate how physical it is. Your back, your neck, your eyes, all of that. It's straining. You don't move much, but it's a challenge, especially if you do it daily.
Absolutely. And I feel my vision is going down slowly, because I used to have like perfect vision. Now my eye, one eye is like, I don't know, maybe because you always use the loop on the eye, but you definitely feel it. You definitely feel it. You know, I hope everything's going to be good, because I want to continue this for, you know, many, many years ahead.
Well, the good news is my eyes keep getting, they get worse and worse and worse, but I get better at watchmaking. So I can't see what I'm doing, but the watch gets better.
Exactly. By the way, you told me you were getting into the watchmaking. You got into back in like then.
You're a big inspiration to me, because I was always told that you're either going to have an apprenticeship, or you're going to have a school, and you either go to a school or you get an apprenticeship, and there's no other way to learn watchmaking. Like, well, it doesn't matter how motivated you are, you're not gonna be able to teach yourself this. I'm like, I hope they're wrong. So I went out and I got tools, I got movements, Valshoe 7750, you know, just like you. And I sort of started, and I'm like, okay, let's just focus on getting it apart, getting it back together, and making sure everything runs. And then from there, you go to cleaning, regulation, oiling, and you're like, okay, I'm no longer worried about breaking things. I'm no longer worried about losing things. Now I'm focused on like performance. You know, you just take little steps, but you do take steps backwards sometimes, where you're just frustrated and you're like, I can't believe I broke that, or I can't believe I lost that spring. It's always a spring.
Sounds very familiar.
So now you got to the point in 2016 where you had, and maybe we'll talk a little bit more about my watchmaking later, but this is about you. You had the DR01, I guess it is, because I've got right here the DR02 for all you out in cyberspace. Yeah. You can see, this is your second watch. What was your first one like?
It actually was 44 millimeter. So it had a ribbed bezel, something like a Chrono Swiss.
Okay.
It had an onion crown. You can Google the picture and maybe you'll find it somewhere. But yeah, that was the first initial watch with the 44 millimeter case and a pretty thick. It was pretty thick, maybe like 15 millimeter thick. But people still wear it. I had maybe like 10 pieces out there that my close friends basically got. And I said, that's it. This will never be made again.
And so then you moved on to the DR02, and you made some changes. And I talk a little bit about some of the changes you made. Were they for the market, personal tastes, feedback from customers and friends?
Oh, yes, I did. I kind of realized that the 44 millimeter case was a little bit big for the time. And I saw people moving away from the bigger cases to smaller cases. So I thought I needed to find a middle ground between something small and something large. So 42 millimeter was ideal, because at first I built the watch for myself. So as an enthusiast, I had to build something that I firstly like. And so for me, the 42 was perfect. And even though I don't have a big wrist, but I just like a little bit bigger watch, because smaller watches don't look that good on me. And Then I had to create something custom for people to appreciate, because, you know, when you go in the store and you get the watch, it's a completely different experience when you're getting a watch from a watchmaker. It makes it from the start to finish. And so I had to learn the finishing, learn the beveling, learn the striping and graining to make the watch even more special. Because I like the way you say, you appreciate that work that goes into the piece, not just, you know, assembly and done, but I had to make it more special. So that was my thing. And plus I decided to color the hands by myself. So the client can choose a different color of the dial, a different color of the hand, and match the stitching, and that's it. And this was the customization that I would do for the client, and I think people had a good feedback on that.
And I have to say that when I first saw your watches in person at Watch Time last fall, I'd known you were out there. I know there are a lot of guys around who are making watches, but sometimes you don't see them unless you get together at a trade show where everyone's together in one place. And so you showed me the watch, and I'm looking at it, and I turn it over, and I'm thinking, you know, okay, this is not quite what I expected. I expected, you know, he went out, he bought some parts, he put them together, you know, put his name on it. And then I'm looking at the watch, I'm like, this is really intricate. Like, there, you can't order it finished like this from Salida or ETA. And one thing in particular that got me was the start-stop lever for the chronograph on the 7750. It's got one part that's spring-loaded, and then it has another part that pivots back and forth as it indexes the cam. And you black polished the first part and satin finished the second part. And I showed that on my watch to one of our watchmakers. He's like, how did he do that? Those two parts don't separate.
So yes, they do not separate. So that was pretty challenging. You're talking about the chronograph lever, right? The one that pushes the hand?
Yes.
That was pretty challenging. I actually take a little wooden pick and a little bit of the paste. First, I have the paste that's with a little bit harder to shape, to make it straight. And then I take a softer peg and dip it into the paste, the diamond paste, diamantine. And it just goes, the peg has to be smoothly grained, so it's very, very like straight. And then I just go and polish the surface slowly back and forth until it's completely black polished. So yeah, it's a very tough challenge, because if you see the chronograph cam, I sand blast it first, then I straight grind the top, then I carve the sinkholes, I polish the sinkholes before it goes into the watch. So it's like I created myself a little challenge to make it special. And that was, that way you can just, you know, experience it completely different than the usual 7750.
And everyone who's out there in cyberspace listening to this really needs to understand that the value of a watch is the amount of human effort that goes into the watch. It's very easy to say, oh, this is a 7750, but when Recep Recepi left his internship at Patek Philippe, he made money by buying ETA calibers, hand finishing them, casing them up, and selling them as his original watches. So if you're lucky enough to have one of those Recepi finished ETAs, you may be a rich man someday. Dan Reuter is doing the same thing, so keep an eye on this guy.
This is just the beginning, guys. I mean, I hope to prosper and maybe make my own movement soon. But this is a good starting point for me, and I wanted to create something that I could be really proud of and put the great grandmother's name on it. And you know, one day after I'm gone, you know, the watch will be out there and working, and thank God. But this is for me to make the personalization. It's like creating a story. A person that's ordering the watch, I actually show them the process. I show them the pictures of how I do it. I show them, remember when I did the watch for you, I show you the colors, how I mixed it.
Yeah.
So that's something you would carry on with you for many, many years, and you get to appreciate. Even people that don't know the watches, they say, wow, this guy did this for me, did that for me. And he starts learning about it. I have so many friends that had no idea what the watch is made of, what's inside. They thought there's a battery, that's it. You know, and now they're like, they get into the brands, they go to Watchbox, they experiment, they see all your videos. By the way, I wanted to thank you for all the content you provide. This is, you know, I started from, probably you were the first person to
I discovered on YouTube, and I started following you ever since. And it's funny that you remembered me on time, on watch time. I probably think you would forget about me, but it was a very special moment. And when I saw you auctioning off that Zen, I knew how special it was for you. I said I have to make Tim my watch, because there's so many connections to it, you know, and like, it was perfect.
And, you know, it's really cool because a lot of talk goes into, you know, we speak frequently about finish in the watch industry and high horology, haute horlogerie, the way a movement is made to look, the way a watch is made to look. But if you look at a lot of the tests for certification as a watchmaker, especially with the AWCI CW21, 1/3 of the core of the test is precision timing. And most high-end brands don't want to talk about accuracy. You adjusted my watch in 6 positions. You gave me the timing certificate, and this is the most accurate mechanical watch I've ever owned. It's up there with my ex-JLC Duomet, which was a $50,000 watch. But this is keeping time like that. So I don't want to understate the importance of it. Accuracy still matters.
Well, yeah, for me, it's very, very important. And I learned all the techniques of adjusting and making sure and how to oil it properly and you know, how to put it together. Because first, look, I start with the top grade 7750. I completely strip it down, right? It's like, you know, in front of me, like with all these little parts. Before I put everything back together, I have to refinish first. I have to oil it, put it together, and test it. So testing takes about 2 weeks. It's not like you test it and for, you know, a couple of minutes and good to go. No, I actually wear the watch, make sure it's, you know, it's solid. Yeah. So of course I do it accurately, but make sure it functions in great in all different positions, and only then it goes to the customer, the client, or the friend. It doesn't matter, you know. Every client becomes a friend, actually. So any person I interact with making the watch, that's it. They're like family to me. You know, this is very important for me to actually. This is the reason I don't do scale. I don't do a lot of pieces. I don't produce mass. I want to keep my crowd and close together to me and get to know everybody who actually wears the piece.
And so at this point, you're making a maximum of about 75 watches a year. So the folks who are listening, these are uncommon watches. You're talking maybe 6 per month, and they're very bespoke. So you're going to have a relationship with your watchmaker. And that's why I sold most of my JLCs, because look, there is no LeCoultre family member running the company today. I'm never going to have a relationship with the Richemont brand. I admire what they make, but this hobby is about people at the end, and it's really nice to know your watchmaker.
That's exactly why I'm doing this, to get to know people. I'm very social, and I love to meet new people and go out there and, you know, in the different watch groups and, you know, introduce myself, get to know you and your story. And this is how relationships are formed. You can't really just go outside and say, hey, look at me, let's talk. But watches kind of bring people together, and you get to appreciate it in a different way or form, you know. Recently, I started going out joining different watch groups in New York, and this was a great opportunity to just, you know, get out there and, you know, meet new people. It's amazing. The community out there is just pure and amazing. I love it.
Yeah, and you are very active on social media. You've got a great Instagram. What can folks find there?
Thank you. I mean, actually, you know, all the process that I get involved with in the watchmaking for clients, and I display all my work there, basically. So if I do a special piece, I take all the pictures and the videos, and if the client is okay with it, I display the process and finishing and everything.
I should also mention, and this is kind of an important thing to mention, that you are always evolving as a watchmaker, and you're wearing something a little bit different. Could you tell us, are you wearing the engraved dial? I thought I saw it there. Tell us all about that.
Absolutely, sure. So, you know, when you start building watches, you're never satisfied with one example. You always want to create something else, and this was kind of where this was born from. I got a book of Breguet, and as I was starting to look at the pictures and the history, I was really, really inspired in how the guy was able to manage to make over 4,000 pieces, and all of them were different. And I was like, whoa, and we're living in this world of technology, and we're like, you know, we need to catch up. So I met a wonderful friend on Instagram through Instagram. His name is Artur Akmaev, and he actually helped me to get this dial done. And he actually does a great work with engraving. He engraves each and every rotor that in the back of the watch. Tim, your watch was engraved by him as well.
Mine right there.
Exactly.
Those of you who are seeing the video version of this on the internet, you can see Reuter and my name on that rotor.
Yep. So we can pretty much do anything. He engraves, he does lathe, he does the dials. So when the idea was born, I was kind of like throwing out designs to him, and he's like, okay, let's do it. And so he agreed, and it took him about 3 months to do the dial, because he's a busy guy. He works with Jeff Shapiro. I'm sure they have a lot of work. And he was gentleman enough to help me to finish this dial. And it was like a collaboration between West Coast and East Coast. That's what I call it. He's in California, I'm in New York. And so he cut this plate from sterling silver from scratch. Like if you go to the Instagram, you probably see the way he made it. And then he shipped the dial back to me to do the graining, or sandblasting, I should say, not the sand, media blasting, on the middle section. So and then I polished the hands, I put the finished the movement, put the watch together after he was done with the dial. So it was pretty special. And this is one piece, one out of one. Hopefully someday we'll make some more pieces with him, and you know, let the other people hopefully enjoy it. But yeah, it's very special.
Now you also a little bit more on the hands on that watch, because those are in some ways just as impressive as the dial. Now Kari Voutilainen makes hands in two different colors, but he makes his hands of several pieces. You managed to get a break in the color and the finish in one piece hand.
Yeah, this was pretty tough. So the hand started out to be stainless steel, and then there had to be, I don't know, can you see?
Oh yeah, yeah, I can see it now.
Yeah, yeah. So they had to be blued at first, and then the top part had to be covered, and the whole midsection had to be polished. So the top would remain blue, and the rest of the hand would remain in stainless steel. And I would carve even the hole inside of that tip and polish it inside also. So it's pretty challenging. But again, this was an experience, and I'm still learning, and I, you know, try to do whatever I can. And I learn from the best watchmakers. I go on YouTube, you know, exactly. You post the video, you see all the tools, you see what, you know, what other watchmakers use, and you get to learn from the best. I look at Philippe Dufour, Richer Prechepi, Along and Zona, and this everything is out there. I mean, it would be great for somebody who actually know what they're doing, point you to the right direction. But if you don't have that opportunity or pleasure, you have to do it yourself, and you just do it by learning, experimenting, do it again, you know, ruining one thing, making the other better.
Yeah, it's interesting because I've been inspired by a bunch of people who didn't really have a traditional path to watchmaking. Mike Michaels, who was a mentor to me at one point when he was here, he started as an airframe and power plant mechanic, and actually so did Ludovic Valois, but that's a different story. Right. And so he said, you know, look, I thought it would be easier on the body to work on watches, and I also thought it was interesting. So he got started, and when he went to take his tests and certification, every time they'd either say, well, you've never been through our schooling program, so you're not going to pass our test, and he would pass the test. Or the Swiss would say, well, you weren't educated here in Switzerland, so there's no way you're going to pass Qualité Fleurier, and he would pass the test. And then, you know, you're saying, look, you don't need an apprenticeship, you don't need a school, you need a work ethic and motivation and passion, but there's no one or two right paths to becoming a watchmaker.
Exactly. As long as you're passionate and you have the work ethics, you could achieve whatever you want. I mean, look at Elon Musk, right? He wanted to make an electric car, and he did it. He wanted to go to space, and he did it. Everything is possible. Everything, the sky's your limit. You with the right mind and hands and eyes, you could just do it, and that's it. And there's no excuses. You wake up, you feel down. I turn on the video of watchmakers making the watch and say, okay, let's go back at it. And that's it. That's how you do it.
And for all of our friends out there in cyberspace, all these resources are equally available, and it doesn't take much space. It takes a lot of dedication to become a watchmaker, but it doesn't take a lot of space. Dan, I can see your bench in the background. How much space total does it take to do your watchmaking?
I mean, this room is like, I don't know, 30 square feet, but it doesn't take much. It's all about, again, it's all about the will and what you're willing to sacrifice. You of course, you have to sacrifice your time. And, you know, I've been a DJ, I've been, you know, I've been a salesman, I've been a lot of things. And at the end, I decided to take this journey because this is what I get the joy from, pure joy. And I see people, other people enjoying it with me. And this is just a bonus and a gratitude, you know, and I'm thankful to everything for everything to, you know, fans and to you and everybody who's watching. Just this is amazing.
You talk to me a little bit about some of the watchmakers you admire who are working today, people who are your peers or maybe aspirational figures for you.
I mean, there's a bunch. I really like Philippe Dufour. He's like a grandfather for you know, for the watchmaking. And also George Daniels. I got his book, and he also I also learned from him a lot. What he described in his book, and I saw his videos on YouTube, and you know, he had no education, so he was like a really inspiration to me because I thought, okay, you know, without education, you can just learn yourself and just strive for the better and just keep going, don't give up, and slowly, you get to appreciate what you do yourself because you see it's working, it's coming out well, you see the result at the end, you see people enjoying it. And yeah, and so those people, again, Rashep Rashepi, he's a young generation watchmaker, he's an inspiration, even though he did go to school, but nevertheless, you look at what he does and where he came from and how he did it, and just you kind of acquire those, you know, moments and just soak everything in and just makes you better. I don't know, I love it.
No, I totally appreciate that. And I think it's really fascinating how much of this you're doing in New York. And I've got to ask, because you do have partners in Le Chaux de Fonds, like the watch says Swiss made, but it's also very much New York made. So how do you make the decision of whether to call it Swiss made or New York made?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. So when I initially met my partner in Switzerland and we decided to, you know, go with the Swiss made, I wanted to actually had his factory complete the watch in Switzerland. But then when I decided to do the special finishing and special touches on my own, I kind of said, and plus the coronavirus, it's pretty tough, challenging to go back and forth. So I decided to stay in New York, but I already had the dials made with Swiss made. So it was kind of like also cool part about it. It's like, you know, I'm in New York, the watch is Swiss made, but you know, there's a story to it. And again, In near future, I'm planning to put New York NYC or something on the dial to commemorate my state and in the city where I work. Because again, there's not a lot of people in New York City make their own watches. You know, I know a few in different states, but for New York, it's kind of like, you know, oh wow, you're made in New York. That's cool. And so that's how I put in Swiss made and / New York, you know, on the dial.
So if you want an American made watch specifically, you're definitely get that. If you want some Swiss, it's got some Swiss in it too. It's the best of both, really.
Absolutely. We make all the components in Switzerland, and they're being shipped to me. I do all the quality control, final finishing. I do the I refinish the cases. I do black polishing on the lugs, and I control every single part on my own, and all the standards are, you know, to the top, to the T, and make sure everything is like Swiss made. No, not exactly Swiss made, but it's
Swiss standard, but American made.
Exactly. And I even do the certificate of accuracy, and all the movements, they are chronometer certified, but it doesn't come with the exact certificate from Switzerland because the movements are already been tested before, and so I make kind of like in-house testing, and but the watches, all the watches, I try to tune them up to the, you know, the spot.
They did a lot of work on the case, and actually I've got right here, you can see that, I don't know if you're watching this on the internet, you can see Dan's black polished the underside of the lugs, these little tips. He's done some fine finishing right there. And I think you also did some reaming of the gauges for the case back as well.
Oh yeah, yeah. I actually had to go in with the little toothpick and also with the little paste and just go around and make sure all those little indents are polished to the highest level. And also, you see the in the center of the rotor, it's yes. Also been black polished. Yeah.
You can see that well. It's turning black.
Exactly. All the screws. It takes a real long time because you have to go through every single component that's visible from the back, including the screws. And it takes about 2 weeks just to finish the components before assembling, testing, and everything. So it does take a little while. But at the end, I'm passionate. I do what I love, and I don't. My time is. I don't look at time I don't time every second of what I do. I get into it, and that's it. Once it's done, it just has to be beautiful.
Now, do you all, at this point, I have to assume that you've got some watches that are important to you, watches that you've collected over the years. Could you give us a little bit of insight into your career as a collector?
It's funny. I mean, when I was buying and selling watches, I've seen so much and I've had so much, and I've bought and sold and kept a lot of pieces. But at the end, when I started my own watches, I mostly got rid of everything. So I only kept few. That's my mom's watch. That was a gold Frank Mueller, and I kept one special watch for myself just to keep it for in the family. It was a Rolex Submariner 14060, or no date,
oh yeah, it's probably like a 14060.
Yeah, so that was an 08 sub, and it was made by Tiffany in 1992. And I actually have the original certificate from Tiffany. I have the original certificate from the original receipt from the Tiffany. It had like a $2,000, value back in the day. Yeah, it has a print on a dial. It has Tiffany & Co. It has original box and old papers. And yeah, this is a special watch. I bought it from a dealer back in, I don't know, maybe 2013 or 12. And ever since I kept it in my vault. So that watch kind of special to me. But other than that, I don't really collect any watches. I mean, because I kind of lost that interest of collecting because I want to concentrate totally on my own. And I see what other people are doing. And I kind of like, okay, I mean, it's all out there, but I'm going to concentrate on my watch. And that's it. So I let everything go.
And I respect that because as the customer, I benefit from that single-minded focus on your watches. So that's pretty cool.
That's exactly right.
So let me ask you, what does the future hold? I mean, what are your ambitions as a watchmaker? I mean, where do you see yourself in 5-10 years?
Well, my next step is probably build a three-hander. I want to build a three-hander watch with my own movement. Again, finish it to the highest level and make it probably this time around 40 millimeters. And this is the next step I'm going to take. And eventually, we'll see. I'm not going to say anything, but hopefully someday I'll make it to be on. that's going to be my goal for the next 5 years.
I will be your first customer for that tourbillon.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It'll be a pleasure for you to have a watch.
So if you want to get a DR02 from Dan, you know where to find him in New York, but specifically, where can they find you online to reach out?
Well, they can visit my website, www.reuterwatches.com. Or they can find me on Instagram at Reuter Watches, Facebook, and there's also another account I have. It's a little bit more personal than Reuter. Yeah, you can just shoot me a message or just reach out on my email info@reuterwatches.com, and we'll take it from there. I mean, I would love to hear from you. I'd like to hear your feedback and maybe work with you in future.
So folks, I've owned a lot of watches and I've interviewed a lot of watchmakers. Very rarely can I give a personal endorsement, but here I give my unreserved personal endorsement of Dan and the stuff he does. His watches are outstanding and he's an even better guy.
Thank you, Tim. It means so much to me and I really, really appreciate you for everything that you do for us, for the community, and keeping the community alive. This is right here. Thank you so much, Tim.
My pleasure, Dan.